Now, what are the potential advantages of internal and external recruitment? Pros and cons, positives and negatives. Pros, positive, cons, negative. Easier to access applicants since more information is available. You have continuous information of the people working in your organization. You will have continuous flow of information as to how that person is performing. Is the person living up to the expectations? Is the person achieving deadlines? Is the person living up to the work expectations? And is the person the kind who has that dynamism in him or her? Provides new fresh perspectives. This also is equally effective because here innovation comes into picture. Less costly and quicker than an external search, may bring new insights from other industries. So this person, when you talk of hiring externally, may come up with such effective ideas because he or she has worked elsewhere, especially say if you're your competitor and after working there for 5 years has left, then he or she would bring about ideas which would be highly beneficial for you. Promoted employee is already familiar with the organization's policies, culture, definitely. Here, initiate a turnaround. The person has to keep himself updated as to what is the rules or what are the rules, policies, regulations. Alright, so we continue with the pros and cons. Potential advantages when it's internal hiring. Recruitment signals to employees that career opportunities exist in the organization. Your hiring experienced employee can reduce training needed. When I ideally hire an employee from another organization, I will be aware that we don't need to provide him training. Why? Because he is too skilled a person whom we have hired, which may not be possible if I've hired someone from within the organization but may need training. Improved employee morale and organization loyalty, right? You get a benefit, a chance to prove yourself. Your internal politics may be avoided. Less upsetting to present organizational hierarchy. We need to understand that when I hire somebody externally, also the people within the organization, like two of them may feel that, oh, we should have got this, promotion. Out of the two, one would have got it. So the other person who would have not got it, it would have been chaotic. The person would have felt due to dirty politics, due to somebody else's opinion, he or she did not get through in terms of promotion. So the best option is to hire someone externally. Lower cost for some jobs definitely makes a difference if you hire from within. And here allows rapid growth, increases diversity, only hire at one level and bigger talent pool. When you say allows rapid growth and increases diversity, especially when you talk of hiring from another organization, the person is far too skilled. So we do see rapid growth. You're less likely to make major changes and upset the apple cart, right? You let things go in the typical manner. So what happens? Changes are not at that level, which would otherwise be if you hire someone in terms of another organization, from another organization. Upset the apple cart, that means the way things are functioning, you do not bring major changes. You feel, okay, I've been a part of this organization for 7 years, I'm in another department, but I don't want to bring so many changes. Whereas a person who's hired externally will do so immediately. So the pros and cons can be visible. Promoting from within. When I talk of potential disadvantages, okay, narrowing of thinking and stale ideas in reading. Yes, you have the same typical ideas because you've been there for years. Or even if you've been there for a short time, it's your same thinking. Less information available on the applicants. I do not have so much information of hiring an individual externally. I may get all access to his records, information, but then to somewhere there will be lack of information. May not help turn company around. How will I as an individual help the company to be effective? Only when I am going to be innovative, when I'm going to be thinking out of the box. It's called lateral thinking. Thinking out of the box. Highly diverse, creative, imaginative to bring about changes for the better. training will be needed and learning curve will occur for the job duties. You have to give training because the person does not have skill with that particular field or work. Internal politics will occur, of course it's understood. Possible discontent of rejected applicants, new subordinates discount new boss knowledge and expect special treatment. Now here in this case, if ideally they were considering in the organization, they mean says a CEO, that should they hire you in this department or should they hire somebody from another organization? Now, if you realize that you were a potential candidate, but they hired someone from another organization, sense of rejection sinks in. Whereas, what are we discussing here? New subordinates discount new boss knowledge and expect special treatment. Now, ideally what happens is, supposing you have got a transfer in another department. You've got a transfer because they feel you're capable enough. Now, you realize that since you've got a transfer in the other department, you feel you have that capability. So that attitude and chip on your shoulder. When we say this, it means that you feel, no, now I should not be treated the same way as I was treated before when I was in the other department. So ideally, that can also be a disadvantage. Whereas here, outsider takes time to become familiar with the current system and organization culture, of course, to adapt to the functioning, the people, the ability to hold people together in a group, which may be more difficult here than you were working before, destroys incentive of present employees to strive for promotion. Absolutely. When you are hired from another organization, you yourself will also become aware that I may not get a chance to ideally get promotion. Just the way I was hired from another organization, maybe they will continue hiring people from other organizations. Promoting from within and hiring externally, disadvantages. Difficult to do with rapid growth, right? You don't maybe see that kind of growth. Affirmative action goals may be more difficult to achieve. What are the goals and tasks? You may not see that kind of achievement in terms of goals and tasks. May have to pay more for the job. I guess that is understood. Ripple effect. Smaller talent pool, fewer applicants. When I say ripple effect, ideally, what does it mean? That you will see. The person, when he started, all right, did exceptionally well. But ideally, when he or she got a promotion within, that means internal promotion, okay, or internal hiring, then the person is having the same kind of thought process. Nothing exceptional, nothing new. Same way of functioning. Whereas here you will realize that current organization members may fight new ideas. The people will feel he or she is a new person. We cannot adapt to his ways. And they get together as a team to not really live up to his ways in terms of work. Shortlisting. What do we mean by shortlisting? These applicants are checked against the job specifications in the first round, applications that do not include must-have job requirements are rejected. Firstly, what is shortlisting? Reduce list of candidates for some specific position. When I say reduce list of candidates for some specific position, that means you have a pool of applicants. From that, you come to few applicants. All right? When you're interviewing qualified candidates, you realize the potential. And when you realize the potential, you finally bring it to a smaller number. So if you interviewed 50 people, you shortlist 7 or 8, and finally you come up with 2, and out of the 2, you decide whom do you want to take. Shortlisting ideally to obtain a selected group of most qualified candidates for approval ideally from higher management. That means when I have selected the qualified candidates, then the higher management will finally decide. So, from the balance, HR personnel shortlists applicants to the desired number by checking into desirable qualifications. That means how will HR personnel come up with a few of the applicants? See the qualifications, years of work experience, the objectives as far as an individual is concerned with the kind of work. So what does it mean? Shortlisting. These applications are checked against the job specifications. Do they fit into what we've asked for? Okay, in the first round. And if they do not include must have, they're rejected. So a very simple example. Candidate must have software skills. Now, if you are not updated with software, then you are rejected immediately. So it is first observed that do you fall in the category of must have? Whatever is mentioned there in terms of what you should have, is that put forward effectively? Sometimes assistance of the unit manager for whom the vacancy exists is also solicited by the HR at this stage, by the human resource. Shortlisted applicants are thereafter considered for technical and HR interviews. The basic goal of shortlisting is to exclude as many unsuitable candidates as quickly as possible. You let go of candidates who are not really effective. Some of the common qualities that you can check are as follows. Educational qualification, very important. This can be college education or university education. Professional qualifications, only relevant for some roles and can include on-the-job training. Professional experience, how many years of relevant experience does the candidate have? Evidence of competencies, is there any evidence from the CV that the applicant has some or all of the competencies that you're looking for? So right from the education to professional qualification, that means ideally, what can you do in terms of your work? Then you talk of your experience, how many years, and then competencies. That the applicant has some or all of the competencies. Are you having that kind of skill in being able to work there? Are you competent enough? That is through your CV and of course with the kind of answers you give, the way you answer, which we will discuss in the next chapter when we talk of interview preparation. To make the process easier, you can use the following steps. Start with an idea about the number of candidates that you want to interview. This will tell you how much you need to deviate from your ideal criteria within your available applicant pool. So first and foremost, how many candidates are you going to interview? Very often, if we realize that out of 100 CVs, maybe 20, 25 are just not looked into. The other 25 you feel are average. And then you have 50 and finally reduce it. Depending on the must-haves, qualifications, skills, aptitude, ability, competency, all of it. Conduct your shortlist in stages. Do an initial shortlist based on easy to identify essential criteria. If you have a large volume, this can be delegated to another team member. Absolutely. If you feel you cannot handle it completely, go ahead and delegate it to someone else. Once the first shortlist is complete, then carry out additional stages to refine the list further based on desirable criteria. You gradually reduce the number of people. How many CVs have come to you and how many do you ideally let go? How many do you feel are worth in terms of taking an interview? How many do you feel after taking an interview they seem to be suitable? All those aspects need to be looked into. Shortlisting applicants, set minimum criteria as stage one. Set your educational, professional qualifications and experience minimums and produce a list of all the candidates who meet your minimum criteria first. Ideally, we need to look into one aspect, that do they fulfill the criteria? That's all what is important. Yes or no. We cannot ideally have maybe, especially when there's a choice, and choice is in terms of number, it is enough, right? We have like 50 CVs with us. So we'd say yes or no. This will save a lot of time. As you go through this list, rank each candidate based on your essential factors and record the results in a spreadsheet. This will help you later, okay? And you need to add more applicants back in the shortlist in case you need to add more applicants later. Exclude the inconsistent applicants at stage 2. So we go stepwise. For example, if you're looking to fill a permanent role and want a job holder to commit for a long term, you can ignore candidates with vague employment history and frequent job changes straight away. Ideally, it is said that if your CV shows that you have changed 4 jobs in 5 years, then ideally, even if you're competent enough, even if you have the academic skills, we may overlook your CV. Because 4 jobs in 5 years shows how inconsistent or unstable you may be in terms of not spending enough time at a workplace. Obviously, this would not apply for short-term contract roles, and you may even want to reverse the criteria for these types of jobs. Last stage is filtering. If there are still too many interview candidates in your shortlist, after stages 1 and 2, you can begin to filter them through the desirable non-essential qualities of the job. Filtering. If you have 10 CVs, come to 7, 7, then come to 5, 5, then 3 to 2. These can be things like sector exposure. Have they worked in the same environment before? Yes, you've got to somewhere figure out that is this person worth it? Is this person fitting in here? Recent highly relevant training. Do we need to give training? Then we can let go of the CV because the other candidates who've got the training. Experience with the company's main systems, directly applicable technical knowledge, etc. Interview. Once you've shortlisted as much as possible, the interview should be designed to affirm your shortlist criteria and to look into personality fit, expectations, and other checks to evaluate the applicant's compatibility. See, when you talk of shortlisting in terms of the CVs, shortlisting in terms of the candidates, right? You have ideally take, for example, you've taken interviews of more than 30 people. At the end of it, you feel that we have got 2 CVs, both the CVs, extremely competent people, equal in terms of years of experience for both of them. Both are academically inclined. The only difference is one is physically challenged and the other one is not. So whom do you hire? So here again, you've got to decide that, okay, if both are academically inclined, both have 8 years work experience, both are highly competent, what do we look into? We look into the personality fit once we take the interview and then we decide. Now, after taking the interview, what fits in? That who seems more dynamic? Who seems more, affirmative in terms of what he or she wants to do? Who ideally is suitable for this designation in terms of contributing maximum towards the company? So we talk of personality fit, expectations, and other checks to check to evaluate the applicant's compatibility. Be flexible, but stick to your criteria. It is impossible to expect that a candidate will satisfy all the requirements while having a perfect education, professional qualifications, and experience. Recognize that you may have to deviate slightly, but to eliminate bias, try to make the decision based on the person who most closely matches the criteria you have specified for the job. By following these points, you will be able to shortlist applicants for your positions in a highly effective way, making sure to eliminate personal bias and keep the process as fair as possible. Job interviews. A job interview typically precedes the hiring decision and it is used to evaluate the candidate. The interview is highly preceded by the shortlisting process for evaluation of submitted resumes from interested candidates. So once you have ideally submitted your resume, then the next step is decided. Selecting a small number of candidates for interviews. That's next. Potential job interview opportunities also include networking events and career fairs. The job interview is considered one of the most useful tools for evaluating potential employees. It demands significant resources from the employer, yet has been demonstrated to be notoriously unreliable in identifying optimal person for the job. We are humans. At the end of it, we all can make mistakes. So I may feel when I take your interview, you're the best person for this job, and maybe 2 months wrong, I may be proved. 2 months later, I may be proved wrong. An interview allows a candidate to assess the corporate culture and demands of the job, right? So when you talk of job interview after your resume is submitted, then what is your interest in terms of you applying for this job? What is it that we expect from you? How do we evaluate you? Do we consider you a potential employee for our organization? We may or may not be appropriate in terms of the way we judge you to be when we hire you. Over a period of time, your work will say. Job interviews. Interview constructs. In light of its popularity, a stream of research has attempted to identify the constructs. What do we mean by that? Ideas or concepts that are measured during the interview to understand why interviews might help us pick the right people for the job. Several reviews of the research on interview constructs reveal that the interview captures a wide variety of applicants' attributes. When I go through your interview, I can figure out what are your skills, what are your strengths, weaknesses. When you write an objective in terms of an interview, like this one student has written, the ability to call a spade a spade. Now, ideally, you can be questioned, why have you written this? What does it mean? Do you think you are actually the same as an individual when you mention this? So it means you're too forthright, you're too direct, you have the ability to say what you wish to. But again, a lot depends on how effective you are in terms of expressing that. These constructs belong to three categories. So your ideas and concepts, they're based on job relevant interview content, okay, interview questions, which are designed to assess about you. Interviewee performance, applicant behaviors unrelated to the applicant characteristics. The interview questions are designed to assess, but nevertheless influence interviewer evaluations. In simple words, the interviewer evaluates you a lot through what you've said. So that's what is put forward here. We will be discussing this in depth in the next chapter. Then we talk of potentially job irrelevant interviewer biases, personal and demographic characteristics of applicants that may influence the interviewer's evaluations, okay, of interviewee responsible in an illegal discriminatory way. In simple words, how does the person who gives this interview respond or react? So what is the focus on? Job relevant interview content, that when we interview you, are you giving information linked to what we expect in kind of the work you have to do? Secondly, are you responding and reacting appropriately, which is this point? And the other point which we talk of, how do we evaluate you? Are we having our own biases and prejudices when we evaluate you, or are we having an open mind? Once all candidates have been interviewed, the employer typically selects the most desirable candidate and begins the negotiation of a job offer. So in terms of location, that you will be expected to travel often, when you talk of your job, full-time or part-time. So negotiations on various aspects. Employee orientation. What do I mean? Job orientation process. A new employee is introduced to the co-workers and given information about the working conditions. They are provided with orientation prior to starting their own job. All employees are provided with training cum experience on organization's policies, procedures, company history, goals, culture, and work rules. Employees are taken on a company tour and introduced to senior personnel. In our virtual world, it is easy to forget the importance of face-to-face introduction. You could be introduced to someone via Skype, audio video conferencing. Sending out an email announcement about the newest team member is nice. Introducing them to the department members and others in the organization is essential. A tour and organization chart completes this task. Employee orientation, the mission, vision, and values are items that require in-person training. This can be in a group setting or one-to-one with key team members. Examples and live demonstration will reinforce the workplace culture's identifiers. Providing time in a variety of departments and functions reinforces the concepts and enhances understanding across teams. What is the vision Why ideally have we got together here today? What does it mean in terms of orientation for us and you? What do we expect from you in terms of your performance standards, in terms of the benefits facilities which you will get and which is expected out of you? Thereafter, unskilled or semi-skilled hourly workers are allowed to train and cross-train on the job. Managerial and salaried employees participate in new employee orientation that is custom designed for them. They ideally, you know, participate. It's like everybody getting together. The people who are just about to start work, meeting the others who have been there for some time. It includes the above information, that means all what we discussed. Additionally, orientation may last 1 or 2 weeks. It enables them to meet the whole organization, their direct reports and more. They get access to all information, access to people, becoming aware of who is doing what. They should leave this orientation with a clear picture of the organization. Every aspect you should know. Its challenges, goals and opportunities. You must know who are the people here, what is the kind of work they're doing, what will be your role, how will you face these challenges, are you going to be effective in your work when you join this organization. It is challenging to make sure salaried employees have the chance to do the orientation while also beginning their new job. Neither can be put on hold, right? Even if you are there since a long time and are a salaried employee, your role in the orientation is important. It provides fundamental information employee needs to succeed in this organization. Summary, to post and fill the position, unit manager has a vacancy, okay, along with the HR manager is required to complete a requisition that identifies a job classification. Whom do you want to hire? What do you expect from them? So, duties, specific qualifications, working conditions, physical and mental requirements, right? I discussed with you in the previous few slides, job psychograph, right? The mental ability of an individual to do that task. This document initiates the process of employee recruitment and selection. When you're talking of filling, complete a requisition, a form, okay? The manager who wishes to hire a new employee has adequate knowledge of the type of individual needed to perform a job. This data has to be crystallized as it has to be utilized by other managers within the organization as well as recruitment agencies and prospective candidates. Otherwise, the manager may not get suitable people to do the job expected and research. This crystallization of job requirement is carried through a document known as job description. We've discussed job description. Effective job description can be written if you analyze the job properly. Specification two, we've discussed written statement of qualifications, specific qualities, level of experience, communication skills, which are required to perform this job. I have discussed, so just going on, right? When we talk of internal recruitment, hiring people internally, concentrating on people within the organization, it is of course reasonable and quicker, builds better employee morale. External recruitment, available pool of candidates from another organization, right? And you talk of skilled or qualified people to do this work. It is a process of searching outside of the current employee pool to fill open positions. Again, then we talk of three reasons why organizations wish to employ, wish to ideally hire people outside. We have discussed larger pool, fresh outlook, competency, right? Whether internal or external, you receive a number of job applications, right? For junior and middle level job openings, the number of applications is large, especially if external channel is used. You need not interview all of them, hence you shortlist them to a manageable number. After shortlisting applicants for job interviews, next stage is recruitment process, right? You conduct job interviews, then a job interview precedes hiring decision. You evaluate the candidate we've discussed and employees are selected. They are provided with orientation we just discussed job orientation, employee orientation, right? How does recruitment process start? So self-assessment questions. What are the contents of job description? Describe the role played by job specification in the recruitment process. What are the advantages of internal recruitment method to select candidates? Disadvantages of using external recruitment to fill vacancies. Why have HR departments to shortlist applicants received for job interviews? How is this completed? We've completed chapter 10. Thank you.